Okay, welcome. Today is the 1st of May, May Day, 2012, and it's a big month, May, because, first of all, on the 5th, is Nrsingadev's appearance day. Nrsingadev is an incarnation of Vishnu. Vishnu is God, and Nrsingadev is a very unusual incarnation, and we're going to talk about that this evening, Nrsingadev's appearance. And we have a new deity, a little murti, that wooden carving of Nrsingadev that we got in Jagannath Puri. On right in the middle of his body, right around his navel, that is a tiny Lakshmi. Lakshmi Nrsinga. So that's actually Lakshmi there. So Lakshmi is Vishnu's consort, wife. And wherever there's Vishnu, there is Lakshmi. Or we can say it differently, wherever there's God, there is wealth, prosperity, and good fortune. Because that's what Lakshmi represents. There are two planetary movements this month. The first one, big ones. I mean, there may be more than two, but two worth mentioning in the big picture. Firstly, on May... May 17th, Jupiter moves into Taurus in the sky. And he will remain in Taurus for the coming year until May 31st, 2013. Jupiter generally stays a year in any given sign. So therefore, it takes Jupiter 12 years to go through the entire zodiac, from Aries through Pisces. So Jupiter has been in Aries for the past year. And now he moves into Taurus, the sign of Venus. And he'll stay there for a little bit more than a year. Jupiter and Taurus, the sign of Venus, is, and these are, of course, what I'm about to say, are very general indications. Jupiter in Taurus in the sign of Venus is generally favorable for wealth, amassing wealth, accumulating wealth, expanding wealth. When you have a Jupiter and Venus conjunction in a chart, then you have a wealthy person. It's pretty much the way it is. So Jupiter in the sign of Taurus can expand wealth overall. Maybe that is a good omen for the world in which we live, which seems to be extremely short on wealth these days. We are heavily indebted, which is, of course, exactly where they want us to be, the overlords that are controlling everything. So Taurus is also an earth sign. It represents farming and anything of the earth. The symbol for Taurus is the
bull.
And bull is actually the symbol of Dharma. Because Dharma means duty. And the first duty is the bull. What does he do? He pulls the plow. That is what the bull does in the simplest form of agriculture. You hook the plow behind the bull, tell them to get going, and we saw the bullocks. And when we were in Mayapur, huge, huge bullocks that they use for farming and pulling various machines, non-electric or non-motor driven. So the bull is a symbol of Dharma. So from that point of view, Jupiter in Taurus is an excellent symbol for Dharma. Does that mean a greater return to what? What is Dharma? Duty? Obligation? Principle? Purpose? Right action? Acting in harmony with one's nature? Acting in such a way that everybody is benefited? When you follow your Dharma, your life purpose, you are benefited, and subsequently everyone else is benefited. That's what we call the win-win situation. If you don't follow your life purpose, oftentimes people are miserable, depressed, unfulfilled, resentful, angry, envious, don't want to get out of bed. And how can they do this to me? That is the mentality of somebody who is not rightly situated, who is not doing their Dharma. Now, there could be other extenuating circumstances, I'm aware of that, but that's fundamental. So, if you do your Dharma, it promotes happiness and fulfillment. So this is a time to for a return or a connection with one's Dharma. Jupiter in Taurus from May 17th. And so it benefits farming, agriculture, anything that's grown in the earth. Venus is also female goods and services. Anything to do with women, women's needs, including beauty, cosmetics, clothing, fashion, whatever else. Also, it's art. So it would be a very, very good year for artists. An inspiring year for artists. Taurus is also, because it's the natural second house, when you go from Aries, Taurus, the second house is accumulated wealth. So it's banking. Now, I don't know exactly what that might mean in the current soup that we are in, but maybe it'll stabilize some of the instability that we're experiencing in financial markets and in world currencies. From my lips to God's ears. And then it would also be good for relationships. So people who are looking for a relationship, of course you have to look at each chart individually to make these kinds of determinations. But still, generally speaking, love would thrive and love would fulfill or produce something of benefit in the coming year. People who may be in difficulty in relationships may be able to resolve the conflicts without much trouble, not much difficulty. Jupiter being in Taurus. So Jupiter's there until May 31st of 2013. Then Saturn, as we've talked in the past, has moved into his sign of exaltation, Libra, for 3 years. So he's there from November 15th of 2011 till November 2nd of 2014. Long time. And generally, I had alluded to the fact that I think it's going to bode well for Saturn, the people. Saturn is the people, the common people. To establish or regain some of the rights that they have been stripped of by, again, banks, politicians, developers, governments, the overlords, the self-interested minority who's controlling everything. So we may be able to overthrow some of that. There is good news on that front. Monsanto has been kicked out of the UK. They threw them out. Get out of here. We don't want you here. Don't come back. They were thrown out of India. Where else were they thrown out of? Someplace else. So people are beginning to cop on to Monsanto, the big GMO manufacturing, GMO research conglomerate, and they're beginning to throw them out of various countries. They're still doing some stuff in France and Czechoslovakia, Hungary, I think. But more and more countries are tossing them out. I think there was a South American country like Venezuela, was it? I don't remember. Anyway, so that shows that the people who are protesting such things, in fact, Monsanto made a statement saying that it's too difficult for us to try to continue here in the UK against the vehement protesters who object to our Frankenstein food. Even they quoted that, because they're called, you know, Frankenfoods or Frankenstein food. And it's something for a corporation to actually state what their, you know, what the colloquial accusation might be. So that was that. So we are gaining ground. So the more we gain ground, maybe we can begin to turn things around. We won't all be thrown, I mean, all of us, millions and millions of us being thrown into the debtor's prison. And our children's 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 children. You know, it's unfathomable when you think about it. Okay, so Saturn is going to go into Virgo backwards. Saturn is moving backwards now, retrograde. He's going to go back into Virgo from, this is a very short period. It is May 26th. No, it's May 16th through, I think it's the 16th, through August 4th. So it's about 2.5 months, May 16th through August 4th. Remember when he was in Virgo before, that's when the labor movement suffered major blows. And a lot of people, these labor negotiated contracts got tossed up in the air, burned up, and everybody had to take a pay cut, this kind of thing. So that's when the people got the shorter end of the stick, especially labor employees. Manpower, workforce. So we've got a couple of months of that. And plus, when Saturn's in retrograde motion, he's not as nice a guy. Things get rough. So there may be some rough stuff that comes up in that time frame. We'll have to see. Okay. But it's only for about 2.5 months. And then he goes forward again into Libra until November 2nd of 2014. So those are the big moves. All right. Many years ago, and I think this was Treta Yuga. Let me look. I'm pretty sure it happened in Treta Yuga. So, Hiranyakashipu was a very powerful demon. And he was a demon because he was self-interested, but to the detriment of others, which is what constitutes a demon. Being self-interested doesn't make you a demon. But when your self-interest preys upon others and you cause the detriment or the harm or harm to others, or they become your victim in some way, then that's a demon, by definition. Because what's being created is nothing's being constructed, things are being destroyed. That's what you see in our world, especially with organizations like Wall Street. These are essentially a bunch of people who are gamblers by nature. They like to gamble. Now, they don't go to the casino and play a few rounds of poker. They gamble on big companies and stocks going up and down. And then they also try to manipulate that through insider trading. And they try to trade companies where people are employed and sell them off or cause them to crash or cause them to fold just so they can make a profit. And the ravages that are left behind in the wake of their destructive behavior, people losing jobs, businesses that have gone on for sometimes more than 100 years are left in tatters. But they've made a handsome profit. So these are demons by definition. So they're an excellent example. Politicians who become politicians because they know they can feed off the fat of the land, because they know they'll be in a position to get payoffs through corruption and doing things to help vested interests, special interest groups and persons to get what they want, as long as you give me a brown envelope or some payola, some payoff. These are demons. I read in the paper the other day where it said, here in Ireland, it said, well, a certain degree of corruption can be tolerated. That's okay. As long as it's a small degree. And it's not, you know, egregious. It's not over the top. Well, what is a small degree of corruption? Is that 3% corruption? Is it 5%? Is it 10%? Is it 42%? You see, what is it? Yeah, you're either honest or you're not honest. There's no degrees of honesty and dishonesty. You either told a lie or you told the truth. You either did an honest transaction or you made some money and acted as if you didn't. You know, people do not vote people into office so that they can receive special favor. Anyway, there's many examples of demons. So Hiranyakashipu was an exceptionally powerful demon. So he wanted to become immortal. And if you want something, one of the things you can do is simply desire it and hold that desire in your mind for long periods of time and invest that desire with emotion, with determination, with the power of will, and envision yourself through visualization having that thing. So we know that can be done. It can work. It would really also have to be in harmony with your karma if you're going to manifest it in the same lifetime. And if you can't manifest it in that lifetime, then you can manifest it perhaps in a subsequent lifetime. That's one of the things people don't always realize. You know, if you listen to people like Tony Robbins, you know, you can be rich like me in this lifetime. You can live in a castle overlooking the sea. Not necessarily. What were you telling me, Neve, when we were traveling in India? You told me that of these people who sign up for these courses and buy all of this, the CDs and the DVDs and all of this, that they have a 1% retention, or 3% retention.
3% of buying, one of the highest sales rate, but the lowest percent of completed.
Yeah, completed, where they actually, in other words, they buy this concept of a get rich quick or get successful quick through this process, through this method, through our method, but very, very few of them stick with it. Anyway, so Hiranyakashipu decided, okay, I'm so big and powerful, even the gods, the celestials, are wary of me. I'm going to shoot for immortality. That's what I'm going to shoot for. So, to this end, he didn't just envision it like we talked about. He did do that. But you can perform very severe penances and austerities and vows and such. Well, that's what he did. So, thereafter, Hiranyakashipu went to the valley of Mount Mandara with the desire to become immortal, unconquerable, the master of all mystical powers and the sole ruler of the universe. Well, that kind of covers it right there, doesn't it? To perform severe austerities, Hiranyakashipu stood motionless upon his tiptoes, with his arms extended upwards toward the sky and his eyes directed toward the sky. Although it was extremely difficult to maintain such a position, Hiranyakashipu did so as a means for attaining his desire, this siddhi, this perfection. So, when the demigods who had been wandering over the earth saw that Hiranyakashipu had gone away to perform austerities, they became somewhat relieved because this big troublemaker had disappeared. And so they returned to their heavenly abodes, but after some time, a light that was effulgent as the sun began emanating from Hiranyakashipu's head. Because he was doing this very severe, severe practice. This fire and its smoke spread out in all directions and thus gradually encompassed the lower and higher planetary systems so that everywhere it became extremely hot. The rivers and oceans became agitated as a result of his austerities and the entire surface of the earth trembled. So he did this for something like 100 years. But in Treta Yuga, the lifespan is 10,000 years for a human. So he did it for a long time. And then Brahma appeared. Brahma is the creator of all the diversity in each universe. So Brahma appeared. Brahma is virtually the most powerful non-God being. He's a human, he's a jiva. He's a regular soul like you and me. You can achieve the position of Brahma if you like. I mean, he's very powerful. He can create everything. So, but he's a jiva. He's not God, not Vishnu. So Brahma said, "What would you like?" And he says, "Well, you know, I want immortality. I want to be immortal." And Brahma says, "Well, that's going to be kind of a trick because how can I bestow on you something I do not have myself? I don't have that." And he's just a little put off by that. So he put on his thinking cap and tried to figure a way around it. He said, Brahma says, I want to offer you a benediction, but I can't give you immortality. So he says, Hiranyakashipu asked, oh my lord, please let me not meet with death at the hands of any living entities that were created by you. Well, that's all of them. And Brahma said, okay. Grant that I may not die within any residence, indoors or outside any residence, outdoors. Okay. Well, it kind of says everything right there, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Indoors, outdoors, where, what else is there? He says, and that I may not die during the daytime or at night. Well, he's kind of got the 24 hours covered there, doesn't he? And he says that I may not die while on the ground or in the sky. Let me not be killed by any created being, by any being created by someone other than you. So any kind of created being, whoever may have created them. And let me not be killed by any weapon. Furthermore, let me have sole lordship over all living entities and presiding deities, the demigods in the heavenly realms, and give me all the mystic powers that are attained by the practice of yoga and austerity. And Brahma said, okay, you can have. And he gave it to him. Well, you know, now, look out. So he returned to the earth, and he began to rule the kingdom, and no one was safe with this power. The gods tried to stay out of his way. They didn't want to come down to earth. They wanted to avoid him, because back in those days the gods would come and go down on earth. There was a book out many years ago, I'm sure there's books more recent, called Chariots of the Gods. I think it was by Eric von Daniken, and it was all about all the proofs in the world of these celestial beings in airplanes of some sort, aircraft, who were very tall, huge beings that would come and go and interact here in the world. And there is that evidence. It is here. So they would come and go back in those days. So it so happened that when he was away doing his austerities, his wife, who was a reasonably good soul, was pregnant, and she gave birth, and some of the gods wanted to kill her off when they saw that she was pregnant, because as far as they were concerned, she was carrying around the seed of the demon, and that's the last thing they want, is yet another demon seed. And some sages that lived in a holy place in an ashram said, no, you can't kill her, we are taking her, we're going to protect her. So they took her in, and the sages knew who was in her womb. And she had a son that was gestating in her womb. And the sages took her to the ashram, and they looked after her during her pregnancy. And she would sit and listen to them talk about Vedic stories, talk about God, do their different sacrifices, their sacred fire ceremonies, listen to their mantras, listen to the Vedic stories, etc. So that was the atmosphere in an ashram. Similarly, the child in the womb is also able to hear these things. Some fetuses more so than others, depending how evolved the soul it might be. The soul in the womb was Prahlad, who's actually a great devotee of God. Sometimes great devotees take birth in demoniac families. Sometimes great demons take birth in spiritual or religious families. It can happen. There's many examples of it. So Prahlad was by nature a great devotee of Vishnu, of God. And so even in the womb, he was exposed to the sages and this very potent spiritual atmosphere, as was his mother. So when Hiranyakashipu returned, his wife came and there was the son. And he was very pleased to see his son. I'm so pleased. Here's my son. He has taken birth. And now he called forth the teachers who were to teach the child politics. Essentially politics, which is the science of friends and enemies. So he wanted to teach him how to run a kingdom and how to make friends and make enemies and kill people off and gain power and all these things that he wants to do. But Prahlad was absorbed in meditation on Vishnu, on God. And every opportunity he would tell people about God. So when they sent him to the Gurukula, which is the place of the guru, where you go to school, even as a small child at 5, he wasn't interested in the subject matter that they were teaching, which was materialistic political machination. He wasn't interested in that subject. He was interested in God. So during the recess and every other free time, he'd be telling all the other boys about God, and that you should chant the name of God, and this is the best thing you can do, because this pleases God very much. So when Hiranyakashipu called for his son to be brought to him, he wanted to see what he had learned after some time, and took him up on his lap in the great throne room and said, "Come, my son, sit on my lap. Tell me what you have learned in your school." And so he starts telling his dad that, "Yes, father, you need to surrender to Vishnu, God. You need to become a good person. You need to not create stress in the lives of others and dominate people and make their lives miserable. None of these things are good. And your best course of action is to surrender yourself completely to Vishnu, to God." Well, that didn't go over very big, so that went back and forth for some period of time. And Hiranyakashipu said to Shunda and Amarka, the two teachers, he was very displeased with them. He said, what in the world are you teaching my son?" So we didn't teach him any of that. "Well, where did you get it from?" "We don't know. It didn't come from us." He says, "Well, you better start teaching him what I'm paying you to teach him, or otherwise you're going to be in trouble." So then, needless to say, no progress was made on that front as far as Hiranyakashipu was concerned. And it came to the point where he couldn't take it any longer. And he could not teach this child. The child couldn't not be made to learn. So Hiranyakashipu says on one occasion, "Although medicinal herb is not of the same species as a man, still, because it is beneficial, it should be kept very carefully. Similarly, if someone is outside one's family but is favorable, he should be protected, just like a son. On the other hand, if a limb of the body is severely infected, it may have to be amputated so that the rest of the body can remain healthy. In the same way, even if one's own son is unfavorable, he must be rejected. Just as the uncontrolled senses are the enemies of a yogi who is aspiring to advance in spiritual life. This Prahlad is my enemy because I cannot control him. Therefore, he must be killed by any means. So he condemned his son to death. The Rakshasa servants of Hiranyakashipu, who all had fearful faces, sharp teeth, copper-colored hair, and beards, under their master's direction they took Prahlad, and while striking the tender parts of his body with their tridents, they made a tumultuous sound, shouting, "Chop him up! Pierce him! Chop him up!" So they were very thrilled by the opportunity to slice and dice the little one. Even though a person who has no assets in pious acts may perform some good deed, it will have no result. Similarly, the weapons of the demons had no tangible effect on Prahlad because he was under the divine protection of Vishnu, of God, the internal energy. We are all here in the material world under the internal or external energy of God. External. We are under the external energy, Maya, illusion. To go under the internal, the yoga Maya, internal or divine or spiritual energy of God, you must first form a relationship with God. And the more devoted you become and the more you focus on God, you will begin to enter into the protection of the internal energy. So Prahlad was under the protection of the internal energy. So, which means conceivably external energy, which these Rakshasas were using, may not have any effect on them. Similarly, the weapons of the demons had no tangible effect on Prahlad, who simply sat silently and undisturbed, fully absorbed in meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the attempts of the demons thus proved futile, Hiranyakashipu became somewhat fearful and began contriving other methods for killing his son. So first they tried to chop him up and pierce him. It didn't work. So then they tried to crush Prahlad to death by throwing him under the feet of huge elephants. Then he put Prahlad in a pit full of large poisonous snakes. Didn't work. Then he threw Prahlad down from the top of a very high hill. That didn't work. He gave Prahlad poison. That didn't work. He tried starving him to death. That didn't work. Drowning him, freezing him, burning him, crushing him with heavy stones. Even tried using conjuring tricks and magic spells. But no matter what he did, he could not even slightly harm his sinless son. Being very anxious about what to do next, he thought, in spite of chastising Prahlad with so many harsh words, in spite of devising so many ways to finish him off, I have not been able to kill him. Somehow, he is able to save himself by his own prowess, and because of this, he remains completely fearless. He resembles the crooked tail of a dog, which can never be straightened. For he always remembers my misbehavior and his connection with his master, Lord Vishnu. This boy seems to be immortal. Who wanted to be immortal? His father. Who didn't care about being immortal? His son. But who appeared to be immortal? His son. And to possess, he appeared to be immortal and to possess unlimited prowess. For he's not at all afraid of my punishments, perhaps because of my enmity toward Prahlad. It is I who will end up being killed. Dun, 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 dun. So he gets so frustrated with Prahlad because no matter what, he sends him back to school, it doesn't work. And then he reaches his point where he, Prahlad's his father, Vishnu is everywhere. Just surrender to Vishnu. That's all you got to do. And your life will become sublime. He says, where is this Vishnu of yours? He's everywhere. Is he in this pillar? Yes, of course. He's in the pillar. So Hiranyakashipu pulls out the sword. He strikes the pillar. It's a great painting of the pillar bursts open. And out comes Nrisinga, Nrisingadeva, the incarnation of Vishnu. Half man and half lion. The body of a man, the head, claws, face, teeth, mane of a lion. So he takes, Hiranyakashipu tries to fight him with the sword, and he, like a cat, knocks him around a little bit like a cat does a mouse. Plays around, throws him over here, lets him come back, knocks him around again. You know, a little bit of fun. Cats like that. And then, at the critical moment, he lifts him up and he places him on his lap. Now, where are we? We are in the palace, but we are in a part of the palace that has no walls. It has only pillars. So it's neither, it has a roof and pillars around. So it's neither indoors nor outdoors. It is dusk. It is neither daytime nor nighttime. It's dusk like it is now. He takes Hiranyakashipu up, puts him on his lap. He's neither on the ground nor in the sky. This is God himself, so he's not being killed by any created being, created by Brahma, or any being created by somebody else, because God is Ajah, unborn, uncreated. And he can't be killed by any weapons, so Hiranyakashipu takes him with his claws and he bifurcates him. He rips open his belly. He doesn't actually bifurcate him, he doesn't tear him in two. He just rips open his belly and out come his innards. So, exactly according to this benediction given by Brahma, which when you wrap your mind around it, how could you get around that? You wouldn't be able to. But it was to the letter followed. And that's why this particular incarnation was taken by Vishnu. But, you know, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? You know, it may have been that Vishnu wanted to take this particular incarnation, or it may have been because of the benediction by Brahma that Vishnu had to take this particular incarnation. It doesn't really matter. This incarnation is very, very popular, believe it or not, in many, many parts of the world. Nowadays, I could say of India, but nowadays of the world. And this mode of Vishnu, in this mode as this frightening, terrible lion, half man, half lion, is called Gora Rasa. G-H-O-R-A, Gora Rasa. Gora means frightening. Like a gory movie, exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's where it comes from, Gora. Gaurasa. Very scary, very terrible, and very what's the word? Gee, I can't think of the word.
Visceral.
Visceral. Yeah, visceral, but when it's this kind of violence, when it's very graphic violence, you know, it's very graphic. So that's what happened. And he was very agitated, Nrsingadev. Nrsinga means, nr means man, and singa means lion. Or sometimes he's called Nara Singha. Nara means man. Nr becomes Nara in Sanskrit. It's either word, still means man. Nara Singha or Nrsinga. Man lion. That's what it means. Nrsinga Dev. Dev means God. And that was it for Hiranyakashipu and all the celestials, the divine beings, the gods. We're all very, very happy that he had met his end. And Nrsingadev was pacified. No one could pacify him. Even Lakshmi could not pacify him. None of the gods could pacify him. He was so agitated that only Prahlad, the innocent child, could pacify him. And that calmed him down. And he took Prahlad on his lap, and his devotee who loved him, that's who could pacify him. So it's a story that illustrates to what lengths God will go to protect the devotee, to protect the person that he loves and who expresses his love for him. And will protect him against anything and everything. So, and also you get the sense that what is impossible? Nothing is impossible for God if you're on the wavelength. So, it's a great story. Questions? Comments?
Did Prahlad rule the kingdom after that?
I don't know. I suppose I could find it here. He was still young. I think the gods took over, you know. All the gods came and offered prayers to Nrsingadev. Says here, having thus been thoroughly cleansed, Prahlad became transcendentally situated, so that all of the symptoms of ecstasy became manifest in his body. His heart became filled with love and his eyes with tears, and thus Prahlad was able to completely capture the lotus feet of the Lord within the core of his heart. And this is now all the prayers that the different ones offer. Lord Brahma enthroned Prahlad as the king of all the daityas and danavas, the demons within the universe. Finally, after offering Prahlad Maharaj their benedictions, the satisfied demigods returned to their respective abodes. So yeah, he did become the king. Okay, so we'll do a little chanting and anybody? Okay, so I think we'll just call it an early night. Om Tat Sat. Hare Krishna. When is the next...
2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah,
5th. 5th of June. So how do you guys just have these answers immediately? How do you do it?
I know when my daughter's birthday is.
Oh, is that how you do it?
Yeah, some reason usually.
June 5th, yes indeed. Correct. Jai Shri Krishna.